Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyam Lila, number 12. Sarvabhoma kahi ami tarika kubudi. Tomara prasade mora e sampadasiddhi. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya replied to Gopinathacharya, I was simply a less intelligent logician, but by your grace I have received this opulent perfection. Mahaprabhu vinakahe nahi dayamayo. Kakera Goruda Kari Ache Kon Haya. But for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya continued, who is so merciful, he has converted a crow into a Garuda. Who could be so merciful? Tarkika Sringala Sange Benu Benu Kari. Say. Okay. You want to do one at a time?
No, we can do the whole one.
You want to do the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Se Muke Ebi Sada Kahi Krishna Hari. In the association of the jackals known as logicians, I simply continue to bark a resounding bew, bew. Now from the same mouth, I am chanting the holy name Krishna and Hari. Kahan bihir muka tarkika shishya gana sange. Kahane Sangha Sudha Samudra Tarange.
Kahan Bahi Muka Tarkika Sishayanga Sange. Kahane Sangha Sudha Samudra Tarange.
Whereas I was once associated with the disciples of logic, all non-devotees, I am now merged in the ocean of the nectarian ocean of the association of devotees. Purport. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, the word bahirmukha refers to a person who is very busy tasting material enjoyment. Such a person always poses himself as an enjoyer of the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being attracted by external opulence, the non-devotee always forgets his mundane relationship with Krishna. Such a person does not like the idea of becoming Krishna conscious. This is explained by Srila Prahlad Maharaj in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5, 30-31. Matirna Krishna Parata Sarvatova Mita Bipada De Mito Bipadyeta Griha Vratanam Adanta Gobir Vishantam Tamishram Punas Punas charavita charvananam nate viru swartha gatim hivishnu durashaya ye bahir artha manina anda yata dir upani yamanas te pisa tantriyam uru damni badaha. Materialists who are overly attracted to the material body, material world, and material enjoyment, who cannot control their material senses, are carried to the darkest region of material existence. Such people cannot become Krishna conscious, either by themselves or by congregational effort. Such people do not understand that the goal of life for a human being is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. A human life is especially meant for this purpose, and one has to go through all kinds of penance and austerities and set aside the propensity for sense gratification. Materialists always remain blind because they are always guided by blind rascals. A materialistic person considers himself free to act as he likes. He does not know that he is rigidly controlled by the stringent laws of nature. Nor does he know that he has to transmigrate from one body to another and perpetually rot in material existence. Such rascals and foolish people are lured by the prayers of their foolish leaders for sense gratification, and they cannot understand what is meant by Krishna consciousness. The material world exists outside the spiritual sky, and a foolish materialist cannot estimate the extent of this material sky. What then can he know of the spiritual sky? Materialists simply believe their imperfect senses and do not take instruction from the revealed scriptures. According to Vedic civilization, one has to see through the authority of the revealed scriptures. Shastra Chakshu. One should see everything through the medium of the Vedic literature. In this way, one can distinguish between the spiritual world and material world. Those who ignore such instructions cannot be convinced of the existence of the spiritual world, because they have forgotten their spiritual identity. Such materialists take this material world as the all in all. They are therefore called Bahir Mukha. So Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya here is confessing that previously he was of the class of the Smartha Brahmana. Smartha Brahmana are those who consider themselves highly intelligent, educated. Actually, that's where our word, English word, smart, comes from. Smartha Brahmanas.
Really?
At least that's what I... Of course, you know, you have a lot of...
The
Smartha Brahmanas tell you all these things. So in India, this is what they tell me. That's where the word smart...
We're smarter than you.
...comes from. Smarthas. The kind. Ida Smartha. So they follow the Vedic principles on the material level. So they're very expert at manipulating material elements. So the material platform, the material elements, we had discussed last week how the three things on the material level prevent one from understanding the absolute truth, that the prasadam, one who thinks of the food stuff of, which is offered to the deity, is ordinary food. And those who think that Govinda they cannot understand that Govinda is the personality of Godhead. Can I conceive this idea that God can be a person? It's very difficult for the logical mind to think that Govinda is a person. So therefore they see that because Govinda is a human being, that he's just like us as human beings. That Govinda was just a man like us, but maybe a little bit better than you and I. You know, maybe he had more money, maybe he had more real estate, more family members, more property and things like that. But he's not the absolute truth. Because the absolute truth cannot be a human being. And if we think about all the humans in the world, then it's easily logically to conclude that, you know, when we see all people in the world, Chinese and Africans and Russians, and we think about how, and Americans, how we are as humans, well, God cannot be like this. God must be something different. Well, God is something different, but at the same time, he comes as a human. He says clearly that the fools, when they see me as a human, they think that I'm an ordinary human. But as a result of thinking like that, they become clouded by demoniac and atheistic view and ideas. Because we want to think that God is something else. And then also they will say, well, you know, God, therefore man, you know, creates all these different ideas how God, since God is not a human, then God must, you know, for some cultures, you know, he's depicted as maybe a lion or some big statue of a fish or a giant pig or maybe even a mountain. Or even maybe even a little tiny dwarf creature. So these are all ideas that everything but human idea. We want to rationalize that this is what God is. So therefore God, you know, since God cannot be a human, then he must be something which is indescribable, inconceivable, and incomprehensible. So the very intelligent, logical mind, Smartha Brahmanas, they cannot think of Govinda as the human Govinda, as the original personality, the Adi Purush, the supreme personality of Godhead. And they think that those who worship Govinda are just ordinary people, maybe even not even ordinary, probably even less intelligent people, because they cannot understand that God is this supreme light, and therefore they worship God as this ordinary. So Sarvabhauma is saying that before I was like that, I was thinking like that, and had so many ideas. You know, I was a logician, but I was like a crow. And actually, I was like a crow, and by the mercy of the Lord, now I've become like Garuda. Or even I was like a jackal, just simply in the jungle going, meow, meow! The jackals make that meow, meow sound. Not even like a bark. That's a peacock. But it says, meow, meow! Like that, the sound, meow! The jackals make that sound, like that.
Huh? The birds outside are responding.
They're probably afraid, yeah.
Tekas do have a very kind of fearful sound about them as well.
Yeah, it's like, like that. It's like a growling sound.
Yeah.
Is that we're making this sound, which is actually unintelligible. Not intelligible, but threatening and grossly frightening, full of anxiety. And actually, if you listen to the jackals, even I saw National Geographic, they had filmed at night, like the jackals, hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And even just watching on the TV, hearing them howl, I wasn't even there, this was in Africa, but I got like a little pierce came inside of my heart, like a fear, just to hear this sound that they made. So the gross materialist logicians actually are creating these sounds, which are creating a lot of trouble and anxiety in the heart. Calculating huge, huge, infinite varieties of permutations of numbers to try and explain the origin of life. And it's their calculations and projections simply weigh down the heart and create a big disturbance in the mind. Actually, it's very rare that you could go to a scientific conference and you listen to a mathematical physician explaining some advanced theory of the universe, and it's very rare to sit there and say, "Oh, this is so blissful. I feel so peaceful and so happy listening." But generally, after about the first 15 minutes, if you haven't become lost in the logic, the mind generally becomes weighed down and becomes very, very taxed. Not that this is anything, relatively wrong with logicians, because Krishna does say that I am the logical aspect in reasoning. But because they have not connected their logic to the absolute truth, to Govinda, to the personality of Godhead, then it becomes very taxing and very boring. So the soul finds no comfort. The mind ultimately probably becomes lost. The intelligence might become confused. But definitely the soul feels a vacancy. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was saying, previously I was like this. I took great delight in sitting around making discussions like this. But now, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, can easily say the name of Hari. So he described it as a bahir mukha. And the word is explained here that bahir, people who are bahir mukha, means that they're very busy, tasting material life. Just like you see, if sometimes you look up in a tree, you see the bird. It's eating. Maybe he caught like a rat or something, squirrel. And he's busy, pecking, and all things are going around. Airplane is flying over, tractors are going by, and very rarely will he become disturbed. He's just pecking, busy. He's so busy that he's oblivious to all things that are going on, except something which is very shocking, like maybe the sound of a huge noise, a rocket or something like that. And even he may stop for a brief minute, look around, look up, and then go back pecking. And we can see how, like, they're very busy. So we're so busy day and night. Each nanosecond, practically, our mind is calculating how busy, how to enjoy, how to eat what we've worked to capture in our material endeavor. And then if we don't actually have the substance, the mind is going, laying down and resting, is thinking now, making plan. I'll go here tomorrow, then I'll go there, I'll meet this person, I'll get this. And the endeavor is there, so they're simply busy, 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 enjoying, or trying to taste, rather. So even in the mind, we're trying to taste even things that we don't have, and we haven't achieved yet. We relax and we sit, then immediately we start to plan for this taste, tasting of material enjoyment. So we're always seeing ourselves as the enjoyer of that which is the external energy. But God has two types of energy, internal energy and external energy. So in our mind, generally, and our spirit, we're always thinking how to experience that which is external. Even when we sit and we daydream or we fantasize, we make a fantasy about that which is external. Is it not? We fantasize, maybe I'll get a bigger house, a bigger car, a new baby, a new rose bush for the garden, a new curtains for the room. And all external things we fantasize, we look. And we taste those things inside of our mind, inside of our vision. And that encourages, that gives us the will, the inspiration to actually experience it. But by the time we get it on the material world, that endeavor has generally exhausted us. So now we get it, we don't fully enjoy it to its fullest ability, so then the mind is now thinking. Just like, you know, it's a common phenomenon. Have you ever noticed this phenomenon? That you can go, you can watch people and us, watch ourselves, self-observation. How it's so interesting that when we sit and we, like we go to a restaurant and let's say we enjoy a very, very wonderful dinner, a lot of our conversation is about the next meal. Have you noticed sometimes? That sometimes we're sitting and we're thinking and we're eating and we think of, and we talk about, oh, you know, so-and-so cooked this. While we're enjoying that which is right in front of us, we're talking about another food, or what we ate yesterday, or we talk about a different restaurant.
My mother used to do that. When we were eating one meal, she'd be saying, so now what are we going to have for dinner or tea? And I'd say, how could you even be thinking of that right now? Aren't you just completely full? You can't even think about eating. But she'd always do that.
Exactly. This is what we do. And we do this not only just food, but other activities too as well. We're planning for the next engagement. Because our mind is always busy. So we're attracted by the external energy. This is the nature of the self right now. The soul is that is pursuing that which is forward, outside of itself. And as a result, we have forgotten, we're confused and we're ignorant of this internal energy which is deep within inside of us. So here it explains that Prabhupada says that being so much attracted by the external that we forget our intimate relationship with that which is inside, with Krishna. So we have this relationship with that which is inside of us, Krishna, Paramatma, but we have forgotten that relationship because we have developed a relationship with everything which is outside. So it is our natural position to be involved, to be in relationship, to be in relationship with something. But now the relationship is with the reflection in the mirror, that which is outside, which appears to look like that which is inside. And it does pretty much reflect that which is inside, but it's simply a reflection. So you go to touch it, the mirror, and you don't really touch the body. You simply touch the mirror. So we go to try and enjoy the external thing, but the soul does not get pleasure. Because what we see on the outside is the mirror, is the reflection, rather. So we're touching that which really doesn't have the substance, because it's the inside, the spirit inside, which we appear to be looking for on the outside, which we think, which we're trying to see. Does that make sense? So, then, so therefore, we develop this relationship with the reflection in the mirror. And we spend all the time talking, interacting with the mirror. And we forget that actually we have some other business inside with the source of the reflection, the projection. Because if we look into the mirror, we're saying we look at the mirror, but that ability to even look and see the reflection is coming from somewhere. It's coming from within. So we have a relationship with that source, the power source. And when we cultivate that relationship, it is a very thrilling experience. So that is what is called becoming Krishna conscious. Yet, a lot of times we don't like this idea because it's appears to, we're very conditioned by seeing that which is outside. So that which is outside, Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai, Goni Tai Ki Jai, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. So what we're seeing on the outside, basically, what we're looking at on the outside, is the material body, the material world, and the material enjoyment. And as a result of looking at that, we wind up in a very, very dark region, we explain here. And we cannot find the reality by associating with spiritual people or by our, on our own. Because our projection is still in the mirror. Right? It's quite a phenomenon, you see, that is very interesting. A lot of people, they go on, you know, to the temple on Sunday, they go to the church, they go to the mosque on Friday. And soon as they leave the temple, leave the mosque, leave the church, they're basically only with God for half a second. And they walk out and still the same. So even by associating in a spiritual situation, they cannot change. Why? Because the focus is always in the mirror. So it's very interesting to note. So even if we, I don't know, Krishna says it's a good that we should start this way at least. But even if we go to the church or go to the temple, go to the mosque, and we come and we're asking God to increase my focus in the mirror. Does that make sense? It doesn't do me that much good. So this, you know, the challenge is to actually come and ask God to now give me the real focus, to take my focus out of the mirror, you know, and direct my focus. So that's what Prabhupada says, that such people do not understand the goal of for human life, being human being, is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That makes a lot of sense. Hey, well, thank you. Have a good day. Thank you very much. So the goal of going to the temple, going to the mosque, going to the church is to create, is to sharpen our focus of the ultimate, the supreme reality. And this is the special prerogative, the special purpose of the human form of life, and that's for, therefore penance and austerities is required. So we have to set aside a time throughout the day, throughout the life, to say, okay, you know, I'm so busy, 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 enjoying, pecking, 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 focusing on that which is for the senses. So sometime I have to set aside and say, okay, this is the time to concentrate, not on the senses, but on the Supreme Truth. Otherwise we remain blinded by the urge for the body and material enjoyment, and we become blinded by the illusory prayers of the leaders who lead us onward in this endeavor. I don't think that we could find practically one leader in the course of modern politics or historical politics where that leader has not stood up for any office, whether it's the city council, the president, the governor, has not stood up and promised everybody that, yes, I pray with my whole heart. I am praying for you to stay entangled in prison life. And I will work hard to keep you bound up in prison. It is my promise. That's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. We will make the country great again. And we will keep you
bound in your identity.
Bound to your desire of suffering. We'll keep you looking, and they pray like this. And everybody, yes, oh, oh, yes, yes. And they shout and scream, yes, thank you. And they elect the person who prays hardest and to keep them bound up. And the one who says, comes with a different message. That no, let's turn our attention away. Basically, we have the history that those people are treated very, very cruelly. They're either nailed to a cross, gunned down, tortured, or they have to go away someplace. And, like even in the Christians, they say that John the Baptist, he was could only preach in the wilderness. He was in the wilderness, a voice crying in the wilderness, saying, repent, turn to the Lord, and be saved. That they had people that, in order to hear his message, people had to go out into the wilderness to meet him. Why? Because the emperor, Caesar, or the Herod, was saying that this is not the message that we want people to hear. Everyone has to work for the state. So, the stringent laws of nature, if we keep following this kind of prayer, then even if we don't believe in transmigration, we'll come to a point where this life will be finished, and afterwards no one will remember us. No one will know our name. Maybe for an hour, somebody, or 2 hours, somebody will come and say, hey, you know, she was a good lady, he was a good guy, she took care of her family, you know, he worked hard. Everybody liked him. I remember the joke he told at the party. And then 2 hours later, nobody will even remember. This is the fact, real fact. After that, nobody will remember. I remember that I went to a funeral, and we all stood there and we cried for a moment, you know. And after a while, you know, when the coffin was put down and a wind came, whew, came by, and I looked at him. Then I realize that your life is going on. This person, the world is not stopped. So even if we don't believe in transmigration, what is the value of everything that we, you know, what is the investment that's there? This is the real facts here. But when we're looking in the mirror, we're like lured by this illusion, thinking that these things will go on. They're so important, and we don't know that there's something which is beyond this world. There's a spiritual domain, a spiritual sky, which is beyond this sky. Because we're so baffled by this little tiny sky itself, even though you see now how the leaders, they're promising us that, in 2020, we will have an expedition, we'll be on Mars.
Yeah.
What's the, Well, we're going to go to the space station by 2018, we're going to be able to. Well, what is the use? You're up there, you're in a big giant suit, you have to walk like this, and you can't breathe. What? 2018, that's where I want to be. So this is the only promise that they have. And then you cannot go even far beyond that to the vast, vast regions of the material universe, which is so vast and infinitely growing constantly all the time. We can't even find the end of that. What to speak of a sky beyond that? So, Vedic civilization, spiritual civilization, tells us to look in another direction, look within. Actually, there's a sky which is much bigger, which is greater, which is vaster than the material sky. And in order to look at that sky, we have to have the right lens. That's called the Shastra. Shastra will direct us inward towards the vast sky, and then we'll be able to distinguish between the material sky and the spiritual sky. But if we are busy, looking outward, bahirmukhi, then this becomes something which is not interesting or appears to be valueless. So this is Sarvabhuma. He's appreciating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's blessing in this kind of way. We'll do one more verse here, and then 185. Prabhu kahe purva siddha Krishna tumar priti toma sangha ama sabara haila Krishna mati. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, from your previous birth you have been in Krishna consciousness. Thus you love Krishna so much that simply by your association we're all developing Krishna consciousness. There you go. So first Sarvabhuma, he was saying that I have, and Mahaprabhu was so kind that he said, no. By your association, we are becoming Krishna conscious. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Hari bol.
That's like Prabhupada used to say something kind of similar, right? He would be grateful for his disciples.
Yes.
And that affectionate one.
Yes, that is, yes. That's the blessings of Krishna and the devotees that even though the reality that we may face appears to be discouraging, Lord Krishna and the devotees are able to inspire and motivate us in such a way. Otherwise, there would be no real energy to get out of the material world. Because even if you want to, without that spark and life of inspiration from the devotees and the Lord, You can't get out. You can't get out. You may try, may plan, may think, you know, but the nature overwhelms us, and we can't get out. But we can get inspired. So here we see Sarvabhauma, he was saying, yes, you know, I'm Samartha Brahman, you know, like a jackal, by your grace. And Mahaprabhu says, no, actually by your association, also we're becoming Krishna. So that inspiration is also that understanding that it's not just simply a false flattery, but it has a purpose too as well. Any contributions, suggestions?
Hare Krishna. CC is such a relationship book.
Mm. Pardon?
Chaitanya Charitamrita is so relationship. Such a relationship scripture.
Yeah, this it's like the cream. The cream. Hmm? Yeah, it's like the cream. Of the, it's the icing.
You need a tenant in the office?
Hmm? Yeah. Okay.